to meet Ricardo. Ricardo Cooper here.
He's a...
Man, my man.
Evan says you can move weight. As much as you got. That's good. See, Mr. Cooper, I'm going to turn the substance market on its ear.
Yeah, how's that?
American ingenuity, pal.
Right. Rocker Flake. Absolutely pure. 100% synthetic cocaine. Couldn't grow it any better. Guaranteed.
You got weight on this?
A couple of weeks, you can get all you want.
This is the Vice of Miami podcast, where your hosts, Mark and Tim, review the iconic TV show Miami Vice. Set against the backdrop of Miami's vibrant nightlife and drug trade, Miami Vice follow the detectives Sonny Crockett and Ricardo Tubbs and the entire OCB team as they battle the scourge of the mid and late 80s. With its unforgettable characters, stylish fashion, epic soundtrack, Miami Vice captured the spirit of the times and left a lasting impact on our popular culture. Join us as we dive deep into the world of Miami Vice and explore the show's enduring legacy.
So welcome back, Vice fans, to the Vice of Miami podcast for show number 56. Mark and I are always glad you're joining us. We hope you enjoyed our last show covering El Viejo. So as always, sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy the Vice of Miami podcast. Covering Season 3, Episode 8, Better Living Through Chemistry.
And this episode is written by Ken Edwards and Larry Rosenthal. The teleplay is by Dick Wolf and Michael Dugan. Directed by Leon Echazo. The original air date, November 14th, 1986. And this is the 52nd episode overall.
The plot summary is, Tubbs's attempts to stop synthetic cocaine of the highest purity from hitting streets are threatened by his ex-NYPD partner, whose career was destroyed by Tubbs' testimony regarding a confused shooting.
Let's check out the guest stars and the co-stars for this episode. First up, we have Victor Love as Clarence Batiste. Victor was born August 4th, 1957 in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and he's an American actor. He's best known for the role of Bigger Thomas in the 1986 movie adaptation of the Richard Wright novel, Native Son, for which he was nominated the Independent Spirit Award for Best Male Lead. Some other film roles include It's My Party, Gang Related, Time to Play, Our Father. Television roles include It's a Living, Spencer for Hire, L.A. Law, A Different World, Mighty Max, and JAG, among a long list of shows. According to his Instagram bio, I act, teach, direct. I own an acting studio, www.evolveatlanta.com. I believe in miracles and in the power of love to heal every wound.
Mark, our next guest star is Rob Nilsson as Wango Mack. Rob was born October 29th, 1939 in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, and he is an American producer, writer, and director. Nilsson began his career with the 1978 independent film Northern Lights and directed 40 other independent films over his career, winning the Camera d'Or Best First Film Award at the Cannes Film Festival. His other awards include the Grand Jury Sundance Film Award for the 1987 film Heat and Sunlight and the 2008 San Francisco Film Critics Award.
Next up, Patty Owen as Melody. She's also known as Shante Owen. Some filmography includes Portfolio, Our Family Honor, CBS Microcops Playhouse, and Wife Swap. And it's pretty much all we could find on Patty.
And last but not least, Martin Ferraro reprises his role as Isidore Izzy Moreno, and he really made this episode. I don't know about you, Mark. That's how I feel.
And our co-stars are Nelson Villamore as Henry Luna, Skip Jacobson as Biker, and John Fox Delana as Tiny.
And now for a little Miami Vice in the news. This is just a little something about actor John Deal. His most recent work is portraying the character BJ Vines in the TV series Dark Winds.
All right, going to start our discussion for Better Living Through Chemistry. We open up at a nightclub, which is more like a biker bar or maybe a fancier biker bar, nightclub / strip joint. So anyway, there's a dance party going on and Crockett is undercover. He's sitting with some guy named Mac who's surrounded by a bunch of bikers. And we find Izzy sitting with some guy named Henry who's pretty much oogling and leering at a biker chick. Tubbs walks in with some drug dealer who introduces Cooper to another guy. And our friends Zito and Switek, they're outside in the van recording all the conversations going on. And then this drug dealer asks Tubbs if he can move weight. Crockett here is making a coke deal. And we learn that Henry, who's hanging with Izzy, is a drug chemist who works for Mac. And he's synthesizing some good coke, some heroin, whatever's going on there. The DJ who's pumping the fat beats recognizes Tubbs as a former NYPD cop and pretty much calls him out, not to be mean, so we think. He calls it out to all the partygoers. So Tubbs' gig is up. Crockett pretty much leaves with Mac, and he says that he's going to take care of Tubbs later. I think Zito and Switek there said, oh, he's made. So the jig was up.
Yes, it was. So then now we move the OCB where Crock laments to Marty that six-month undercover operation was blown by this DJ just by pure chance. Tubbs tells him that the DJ was a former NYPD cop who was actually Tubbs' partner. Tubbs vouches that he was a good cop and a good man, but he relates that his former partner named Clarence was kicked off the force for a questionable shoot of a bookie. An IED investigation hinged on Tubbs' testimony. Clarence said that the bookie had a gun, but Tubbs said, I didn't see it. We learned that Mac is cooking synthetic coke. Also, Switek told them to talk with Izzy, who was with Mac's chemist. Crockett's cover was not blown at the nightclub, so Marty tells them, go see the chemist.
So now we're at Izzy's crib here. Crockett and Tubbs pay Izzy a visit, and he's still got his dog sitting business going on. You can hear dogs barking in the background. And I kind of like his pad here. It kind of looks like a little cave type setup.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like. Like a basement type thing.
Yep, right. Izzy tells them that he's been contracted by Mac to offer the sexually frustrated Henry some escort services to stoke his creative ability so he can make this fake cocaine. Kind of make him happy so he does the work, right? So Izzy wants some cash for further info, and he's pretty much flatly told no.
You see, his pre-exhibition with sex has caused him to have a block, and he can't do his work properly.
Well, what else does this boy want to do?
Eat a lot, man. You know, he's up to 275 already, man. He completely devours my business expenses.
Is he?
However, as a man of commerce who is imbued with the industrialist spirit, I am not given to pry into the affairs of my clients.
Is he? You work for us. We own you.
So now we move to Tubbs paying a visit to Clarence at his crib, and Clarence's bikini-clad girlfriend, who we later learn is named Melanie, answers the door, leads him to Clarence. Neither Tubbs or Clarence have seen each other in the 8 years since the IED investigation. Tubbs asks him if outing him at that party was just retribution for this past incident they had with each other. Clarence responds, don't I have a right to? Tubbs says, uh-uh. Clarence said Tubbs should have covered him. Clarence was, we learned he was into this bookie for too large, to 2K. Tubbs maintained that he did not see the gun, but Clarence inferred that had it been reverse roles, he would have covered for Tubbs. Clarence told Tubbs that he thought about committing suicide after he lost his job. And in fact, his ex-wife did kill herself, but the court gave custody to her mother, deeming that Clarence was an unfit to parent. He told Tubbs that he DJs 5 days a week, Tubbs informs him that Mac is a bad dude, but Clarence really chose not to see it that way. Tubbs told him not to play ball with Mac, but Clarence sternly warns Tubbs not to accuse him of something again.
Still slipping down that slippery slope there, huh?
Yes, he is.
Unreal. So we move along here to Mac's place, with his, which is very nicely decorated, and Crockett's presence as well. Mac says that the dude, whose name Evans, who brought Tubbs to the party, is a mid-level dealer who Mac is going to do some test marketing with. Kind of get the ball rolling to get some distribution going. Evans shows up to take delivery of the fake coke that's going to be sold at $12,000 a pound. Ooh, pretty steep. Evans takes a snort of the synthetic coke, and he pretty much vapor locks. He just drops right there. Crockett's just like, nope, he's gone. So Henry says that the potency is too high, you would think, and he's going to adjust the pH. Hope so. So the scene switches here to the Metro Analytic Department, where the analyst puts his substance in her analyzing machine and tells Tubbs that the fake stuff is pretty potent and it's got a left-handed isomer, whatever that means. And the chemist, whoever made this, is very, very good. She tells Tubbs that Mac guinea pigged Evans, obviously, to see if it was good enough. She says that it's 110 times more potent than the real deal. And once they clean it up, the synthetic stuff will be totally legal. And there's nothing to do about it. So now we're at OCB. Tubbs briefs Marty and Crockett that the fake stuff is going to undercut the entire drug market, obviously sparking a big war. And that's something they definitely don't want.
Mm-mm.
Left-handed isomer. Stuff's potent.
Yeah, we know. Crockett watched the guy bounce off the floor with it.
This mixer they've got is good. He's closer than anyone I've seen to synthesizing the molecule. I think they guinea-pigged your buyer. He's got an echinine-type compound here, 100 times more potent than cocaine. All he's got to do is clean up the analog and cut the hell out of the potency. If he can do it cost-effectively, we're in big trouble.
Well, how much more trouble can we be in?
It'll be legal.
Bounced off the floor. I love that. So now we're back at Mac's place, aka the nightclub. And we have both Izzy and Crockett are present as Mac is in negotiations with a Mexican dealer named Sangres, who is looking to supply the Mexican community with the fake coke. Izzy is serving as a translator between the two. Mac has Izzy tell Sangres he's not interested in becoming partners with someone who does not speak English. Sangres leaves. Clarence walks in and tells Mac that he needs petty cash for some new tapes, and Mac floats him $500. He thanks Clarence for the tip the other night. Later, we see Clarence on the phone with a Sangres operative and tells whomever he's talking to that Sangres can nab Mac's chemist at the club at 11 p.m. sharp. We now move to the nightclub, which is around 11 o'clock, where we find Izzy and Henry watching dancers while Clarence is spinning records. Crockett is also there. Sangre's crew walks in. Clarence points out the chemist. Clarence then goes to Izzy and the chemist and asks them if they want to party at the beach. So there's some kind of double cross going on here. Just as they are leaving, Sangre's crew lights up the place with automatic weapons and kills Mac's crew. Lots of dead bodies piled up. And then a look on Crockett's face is, what the?
This scene kind of reminded me of Scarface when that fat dude was dancing and those two other guys were just waiting to open up on Tony Montana at the Babylon Club. Same kind of
thing. Get some.
Exactly. Get some, exactly. So now we're at OCB here. Marty tells Crockett and Tubbs that the DA wants to shut down operations and bring Mac off the street to pretty much avoid the drug war. Meanwhile, Tubbs is on the phone and they find out it was Sangres's gang who did the shootout. Well, duh. Crockett then questions Clarence's motives and how he, Izzy, Henry, and his girlfriend could just waltz out of a 300 round per minute shootout. Tubbs retorts that Crockett has already had him convicted. He already got him locked up. What's the deal? Crockett says no, but it's not going to bend over backwards over misplaced guilt. Got a point. Tubbs replies that the guy was his partner And he asks Crockett, if it was himself, how straight would Crockett be standing? And then this garnered the very long Castillo stare. Thank God.
Love it.
Back. Oh, yeah. It was like, really? So anyway, Marty gives Tubbs some NYPD IAD records to go over. And Tubbs said that his request was turned down for the same records. Marty said this is off the record anyways. Tubbs goes over the files and tells Marty he's got to go to New York City. So Marty gives him 24 hours.
DA wants us to shut down. Pull Mac off the street. Short circuit. Probable drug war.
They'd just be out in a day. We'd be back to square one with no shot at the missing chemist.
What's the word on Sangres's gang?
I'm beginning to wonder if that's who we're interested in.
Meaning?
Meaning our friend Clarence isn't at home. And I'm wondering how he, his girlfriend, and Izzy were able to waltz out of a 300-round-per-minute firefight.
For that you got him tried and convicted?
No, sir. But I'm also not going to bend over backwards with misplaced guilt trying to protect him either.
He was my partner, Sonny. If it were me, how straight would you be standing?
There's a stare.
With that, So now Tubbs heads to New York and he's at the state prison and he meets with a prisoner named Lucas, whom he'd busted 8 years ago for running numbers. Lucas at first denies knowing Tubbs, but then says, yeah, well, maybe I know you. Tubbs said that he made statements to IAD about Clarence, and we learned that Lucas was the dead bookie's partner. Lucas said he was afraid that Clarence might come after him as well. And then he wants to play Let's Make a Deal, so he asks Tubbs for a reduction in his state sentence in exchange for his cooperation. Tubbs also knows that Lucas is in there for unrelated charges. He says, I got favors owed to me, so I'll see what I can do. Lucas then admits that his dead partner had a gun that Lucas hid in the air conditioning vent. He said he hid this nickel-plated mag because he wasn't going to leave it behind for a cop bonus. Rat bastard.
A bonus, right. So now we're at this alleged hostage location. Izzy and Henry are being held by Clarence at an unknown location. Izzy and Henry are pretty much okay, as Clarence pretty much just wants them to work for him. He tells them that the call to Sangres was just smoke and mirrors. Clarence is pissed that Henry is still doing nothing. I think he's just watching TV at this point or something like that. So meanwhile, at Max, he's asking Crockett yet again what happened at the club. Mac receives a call from a quote-unquote distressed Izzy, but tells Mac that they're okay. This is all just an act. Mac asks Izzy what Sangres wants, and as Izzy is pretending to get slapped around and beat up, he tells Mac that Sangres wants $1 million in exchange for Henry. Mac tells Izzy to tell Sangres that he's dead. Sangres is going to hit Henry over the head with a heavy object every 6 hours until the money is delivered in C-notes. Mac wants a picture of Izzy and Henry with the day's headlines as proof of life. Crockett here calls Marty and tells him that Sangres won't kill Henry. Crockett tells him something's wrong. Something's going on here. Why just $1 million as a formula is worth way a lot more?
Oh, yeah.
$1 million. But anyway, I digress. Marty asks him if he thinks Sangres doesn't have Henry at all. Crockett's not sure, but he feels that something ain't right. It's just something's weird. Crockett tells Marty his cover is solid and the next step is to wait for Sangres' call. He tells Marty he is remaining undercover for the duration.
So now we're back at the hostage location where we find Henry working on the formula as Izzy tells Clarence to trust that Henry has 100% synthetic coke. Henry wants Izzy to sample it with him. Izzy kind of turns around and mumbles to Clarence that he's going to fake this. Henry takes a hit from a bong, and then he vaporlax. Now Clarence is in a world of shit. Clarence and Izzy pull a Weekend at Bernie stunt to take a picture of him and Henry with today's headlines. The scene then switches to a beach outside Clarence's home where we find Tubbs talking to Melanie. He asks to speak with Clarence, who's not there. Tubbs wants to know where he is, but he says, I'm going to give you what I know about the IED case. So Tubbs tells her, since Clarence was not there to receive this message, that he basically was vindicated by this Lucas who's sitting in stir.
Yep, you think if you would have played cool, could have been cleared. But anyway, so now we're on a street here at night. Tubbs meets with Clarence. Clarence tells Tubbs that he helped Sangras take Henry Luna because he needed the money. And, you know, could tell Tubbs is like, oh, man, why'd you do that? He tells Tubbs that Sangras is in over his head and will give Luna back because he does not want a drug war. Sangras is willing to set up Mac, but wants to meet with Tubbs at the old marina at 6 o'clock in the morning the next day. Clarence wants immunity and witness protection. Tubbs says he's going to talk to the DA for him. Meanwhile, at Mac's, Crockett receives a call from Izzy, who tells him about Clarence's kidnapping, and it was all a ruse. It's getting pretty deep here.
Mm-hmm.
Rico.
Hey, Clarence. I was just going to call you in the morning. You must have talked to Melody.
Yeah. I haven't been exactly true blue with you lately.
So what are you talking about?
I helped Sangra snatch Luna, Max chemist.
Oh, no.
Man, I needed the money. But Sangras is in over his head, man. He'll give Luna back. And he's freaked. He asked me what to do. I said maybe you cut a deal with him. I mean, I figured your people didn't want another gang war. So, he's willing to set up Mac. And he wants to meet with you. One-on-one, just the two of you.
We're now back at OCB, and as Tubbs walks in, Marty tells him that the NYPD is going to reopen Clarence's case. Tubbs tells Marty that it's going to do no good, as Crockett was right about Clarence all along. Tubbs tells Marty about Clarence's terms for immunity. Marty asks if they could make the case without Clarence, and Tubbs tells him no. Tubbs then tells Castillo that he doesn't need backup for the old marina meeting. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So now we're at Mac's place, and then Mac reads a letter from quote-unquote Sangras concerning the terms of getting Luna back. With Clarence present, Mac believes Tubbs is involved still because Luna is wearing Tubbs' sunglasses in the picture from the club scene. How did he pick up on that?
Yeah, that, Mac, I was just going to say, how was he that observant with all that those people in there?
And I'm sure there's probably millions of sunglasses like that. But anyway.
And why would Izzy have Tubbs' sunglasses?
Right. Mac knows about Tubbs' meeting at the old marina and asks Clarence if he wants to make 150 large to whack Tubbs. Ooh, pretty good. Clarence agrees, and then Mac gives him cash for Luna.
Now we're back at Clarence's house, and we find Clarence showing Melody the $1 million that Mac gave him. With this money, they can start a new life. He calls Mac to give him the details of about the 6 a.m. meeting with Tubbs. Melody is worried that Tubbs is going down for revenge at Clarence's hands. Clarence tells her he owes Tubbs payback. She tells him, you owe him more than you know. And then she just tells him that Tubbs was never allowed to read the IED report and how Tubbs found out there was actually a gun and he was going to the chief of detectives to get Clarence reinstated. She then asks Clarence what he did, to which he replies, nothing I can't fix.
Yeah, if you just played it cool for a little bit. So now closing out here, it's now 6 a.m. and then Clarence and Tubbs meet. Zito and Switek, once again, they're on surveillance in the van, and we find Crockett lying in wait with Mac, kind of behind some big boulders, just checking all the stuff going down. Mac pretty much wants to make sure that Clarence takes care of Tubbs. We'll see. Clarence tells Tubbs that everything's all set up. Everything is a setup, and tells Tubbs pretty much play along with him. As it's about to go down, Crockett just turns and bah, knocks out Mac. He IDs himself to Clarence as Miami Vice. And then Max's thugs begin another well-known Miami Vice shootout. Bep, 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 bep. All these guys are popping up out of everywhere. Tubbs and Clarence take cover, and I think Clarence jumped on Tubbs just to cover him and protect him. Crockett kills Mac. Crockett then busts Clarence and asks him where Luna's body is. So Clarence tells Tubbs about his master plan of what went down. Tubbs tells him that the Clarence he knew wouldn't do this stuff. He would never get caught up in this garbage. But Clarence retorts that the person that you knew died 8 years ago. Tubbs replies, no, and there's more inside of him. And then Tubbs says, no cuffs, I'm going to ride with Clarence to booking.
Where's Sandris?
Rico, listen. You got to trust me, man. This whole thing's a setup. I'm supposed to take you out.
What the hell are you talking about?
When I get next to you, I'm going to pull out my piece. You're going to get in the car.
Batiste, freeze! Don't do it, Miami Vice!
All right, put him on the car. Over here. Know the routine. He was going to take you out, Rico.
He was trying to save me.
Where's Luna's body?
What?
Where's Luna's body?
The warehouse. I saw a way to get the money and pay back. I hated you so much. And then after Melty told me what you'd done, I realized the problem wasn't with you. It was with me.
All right, the rating for this episode, IMDb gives this a 7.5 out of 10. Ooh, Tim, your thoughts, sir?
You know, I give it a thumbs up, and I think it deserved a little bit higher than that. I mean, maybe a 7.8, 7.9. I mean, it was a basic episode, nothing super spectacular or super intense. But it deserved a little bit more than 7.5. You know, we have basic police work in this drug undercover operation involving the OCB. Tubbs reconnects with an old partner, now working as a DJ for Mac. And we've learned that he was booted from the NYPD after an IED investigation. Mac is in the biz of manufacturing synthetic coke through Henry Luna, a chemist. This stuff was so potent that a potential dealer and Henry Luna both vapor locked when they sampled the synthetic. Izzy added comic relief and played a central role in helping to stoke Luna's creative side. Tubbs worked to clear Clarence's name, but alas, too late as Clarence hatched a plot to score cash by kidnapping Luna. Clarence was going to set up Tubbs, but joins forces at the end to kill off the bad guys. Love the long Castillo stare when Tubbs asked Crockett whether he would cover him if Tubbs was in a jam like Clarence. Again, nothing major spectacular, but nevertheless, it was a good episode. Mark?
Yeah, Tim, I also like this episode. I don't agree with the low rating, as even though it's a simple drug plot story, it was still rather good. I liked it. It was a good, again, back to the basics routine drug story for the Vice crew. I don't think we saw Gina and Trudy, did we? Maybe in OCB? I'm not
briefly
sure.
Briefly, we did, I think. Briefly. Yeah.
But I like how pretty much Tubbs once again stuck to his guns for an old partner that he thought was done wrong by Tubbs only because Tubbs didn't have all the information at the time. You know, stick it by him thick and thin, you know. You know, you thought I screwed you. I checked things out. I did essentially screw you, but now I'm going to help you. Too late. Zito and Switek once again back to their surveillance duties. Not much comedic relief from them, although we did have it from Izzy. And yes, the Castillo stare returns. Good episode. Up to the music. Let's take a look at what showed up in this episode. First up, Born to Be Wild by Steppenwolf. That's the opening sequence in the club. Tequila by the Champs. That's when Crockett and Tubbs go see Izzy. And Sledgehammer, awesome tune by Peter Gabriel. And that's the gunfight in the club when Luna is kidnapped. That's just an awesome song. And I think Harry Styles did a cover of it when he was on the Howard Stern show, Perfect, perfect cover.
So now we have some Jan Hammer music showing up here. First one is Rico's Blues, and that's when Tubbs and Batiste meet at Clarence's home. And we have Marina, and that's when Tubbs heads to New York, and also Tubbs walking on the beach, talking to Melody. Now it's time for some Goofs fun facts and locations. Our first location is Las Cuevas del Sacromonte Restaurant, 1794 Northeast 4th Avenue in Miami, which was Izzy's house.
And a fun fact, in this episode, designer drugs and their dangers are a story focus. Synthetic cocaine and marijuana are a reality today, so I guess it's a rip from the headlines, kind of. Today we call them bath salts and K2, respectively, and are legal in many states.
Mark, we have a quotable quote. And a quote is, I conglomerate only with intellectuals. Knowledge is power. And that was Izzy to Clarence, the DJ.
And a goof here. Izzy escapes his cell by picking the lock, but when he pushes the door open, it's plainly obvious there's no recess in the frame for the lock to latch into. And I've got another additional goof, maybe. When Crockett and Tubbs first go visit Izzy at his place and he's on the stationary bike, when he isn't looking, I think he's looking at Tubbs, Crockett leans up and adjusts the setting on the bike, making it more difficult to pedal. You can see the look Izzy gives when he finally realizes, and Crockett almost breaks character, glances away, and you can see really quick a giant smirk on his face. I'm wondering if this was, I don't know if you want to call it ad-libbed or...
I think so. That's awesome.
It was funny.
So now it's trivia time, and let's go over the trivia portion of this episode. In last episode, we asked, when Pearson pawns his 1936 Colt Peacemaker, he steps outside and he looks at the pawn ticket. The question we asked is, what is the name of the pawn shop? Your answer, Gun and Pawn Incorporated.
The show's trivia question is, when Clarence meets Tubbs at night on the street by his caddy, what is the name of the small clothing store on the left side? You can post your answers on this episode's Facebook and social media posts, or you can email us at miamivice@duck.com.
And Mark, I'm going to add just a bonus one if people want it.
Ooh, here we go.
When Tubbs gets the ID file from Castillo, he looks at it. What was the file number that was printed on the front of the folder?
And we have arrived at Snurd's Chalkboard of Wisdom, where we hope to inspire, enlighten, or make you snicker little. Because both in the world of Miami Vice and our current world at large, we encounter many challenges we work to overcome. In the interests of creating a family-friendly atmosphere through the show and our social media, we'd like to offer some parting thoughts to you. A quote, phrase, or words of encouragement, or a funny quip to you, our listeners, because without you, our friends, we'd be talking to ourselves. And yes, we say friends because that's what we consider all of you who follow the show and our social media. And this is just a general quote. This episode's quote is, time. It's hard-earned. It's precious. It's yours. But don't disrespect other people's time. We encourage everyone listening to be a positive force, not only in your life, but others as well. It's contagious and can make our world a better place.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us on this review. We hope you found this episode exciting and entertaining. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing to our podcast and following us on our social media channels to stay updated on our latest episodes and fun content. On Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, we are Vice of Miami Podcast. Your support means everything to us, and if you have a spare moment, we would be incredibly grateful if you could leave us a rating and review on those channels. This helps us to reach more listeners and continuing producing great content. Thanks again for listening, and we can't wait to share more with you soon. So we'll catch you next time on the Vice of Miami Podcast on show number 57, covering episode 9, Baby Blues. Now...
good luck, pal.